The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. The only this time. 4, 3, 2, 1. It's a goal. Right on the Tigers. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion. Just down the bars.
Oh, she is. Had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And can you feel footy's close, Andy?
Oh, absolutely. Already excited about Treloar's injury, which for the Collingwood game. So I think that tangibly moves our probability of winning. So I'm excited about that. I was actually just checking the line at 7.5 points for people who are interested. So we're mild favourites, but you know, I actually described the game as grand final preview potentially. Today, so exciting times. Mm.
Collingwood does have the better list.
That's true. Which I mean, maybe Treloar can update us on his insights because he'll be watching from the sidelines. In fairness, we got a lot of likes for that tweet. The opportunity cost for not getting Treloar. And to be clear, we wanted Treloar. It was not our choice not to get him. Yep. But Nick,
no, had a good crack at it.
But if anything, I probably undersold it, Nick. So do you want to just for the record, do you want to outline, Nick, what we managed to do with the assets that we didn't have to spend on getting Treloar?
So it was 2 first-round draft picks. So it would have been Dan Rioli 1 year, and the following year we wouldn't have been able to do a trade with Gold Coast, where we got first and second. We gave them first and second round draft picks for Prestia, and they gave us a second round draft pick that we turned into Josh Caddy. So the net result was Dan Rioli, Dion Prestia and Josh Caddy, which, yeah, we did okay.
Yeah, and I did enjoy the, someone online argued that getting those two helped us talk. Allowed us to talk Tom Lynch into coming, so that was, I think that might be being
I've watched a lot of old football games in the last couple of weeks, and yeah, it's sacrilege to say it, but I think 2019 team's better. Just Tom Lynch just gives the team an edge that the 2017 team doesn't have.
No, and allows us to. We've talked about this before, but like the 2017 final series. By the way, we should just actually talk about, before we deep dive, we should explain today was going to be, we thought we'd discuss a few issues. It's a continuation of our classic game series. So we're going to talk about 2005 round 7, I believe, versus Carlton, which turned out, spoiler alert, turned out quite well. But we thought we'd check in on a few football-related issues and AFLW as well. So, for me, a crucial difference between the 17 and 19 finals, which we explained before, is in 19, like basically in 2017, everything basically went right. We didn't have any major injuries in the finals. It was wet every day, not soaking wet, but enough that definitely suited our game plan, and we were slightly shorter team in 17. We never had like bad luck with the umpires. You know, I mean, nothing went perfectly, but there was never, and no other team kicked really well for goal against us. But in the 2019 finals, I still say that Geelong final that a lot of things went wrong, and it took an enormous amount of resilience to come back. And you know, we don't win that game, I don't think, without Tom Lynch.
No. Nathan Broad getting knocked out, Jack Graham doing a shoulder. Yeah, we were right up against it, and yeah.
Yeah.
Of all the finals I've been watching in this weird hiatus, I think that one's the most satisfying.
Yeah, it's funny. I really enjoy these with people of what people most enjoy of the final series. Sort of a lot of people list the GWS game, which sadly I wasn't there for. It's the only one final I missed. Yeah, for me, the favourite, I think the two Geelong games are my two favourite games. Not less because I don't like, because of
the first 18 seconds of the preliminary final when Kane Lambert kicked that goal, that was pretty great.
Yeah. Oh no, look, it's a great game, but just, you know, the feeling, the feeling in the stadium, particularly in 2017 against Geelong, was, you know, something. I might tweet it tomorrow. I've got the clip of the fantastic pressure moment in the second quarter. I just love that. It's sort of my all time. It's the complete epitome of the 2017, season. But yeah, so the team's back in training.
Have you watched the training video?
Of course I have. Nick, I just must pour a little bit of a 40 on the block to the, they've got rid of the generic rock ballad, backing, and they've sort of updated it with more funky sort of, you know, 2000 and, you know, this decade, dance clip. So yeah, a bit rappy, you know, a bit grungy, a bit street. I hope just for in respect of tradition that they do the videos of the third round draft pick, which are just them running into goals, kicking uncontested goals, that continues to be back with rock tracks, just out of respect for traditions of the game.
So watching that video, so on our last show talking about Tiger cult heroes, I think did we get to that there were seven different sets of brothers who played for Tigerland in the 90s and early 2000s. So I was thinking about this of, you know, the idea of getting Paddy Dow to Richmond. But then I also thought, well, Bolton's only about 9 months older than Paddy Dow. I was looking at that training video of some of the stuff that Sean Bolton was doing, and you know, you'd have to throw in a really high draft pick for me to trade him for Paddy Dow right now.
No, well, and credit to Caesar on this, Caesar from Punt Road End, that he said that you know, in that scratch game that the training highlights are from, that Dusty was one, but 1B in the game of standing out as being elite was Shy. And you can really see that.
Oof.
You can see the brief highlights in the video. He takes two beautiful marks, and, you know, it's also, if you think about the final series last year, about how many big moments did he own? You know, against play, outnumbered, against Brisbane, against Geelong, where a special highlight from him, helped keep us in the game.
Yeah.
So he's
very much on board the hype train.
Yeah, so he is treading the house down. Now it is not, this was true last year as well, but Sydney Stack, apparently, according to Watchers, was, in the last, Stack and Eggs were bringing up the rear of the bad runners group, so they were running with the rucks and they still, were coming last, so that's according to online reports, so that's probably the opposite of treading the house down, and it was playing on the, it was a possibles versus probables game, and he was playing on the possibles game rather than team with Jack Higgins rather than the probables. So read into that what you will.
I know. No, Bolter was with the probables, which I was mildly surprised by.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Which does lead us to something, you know, we'll get to the game soon, but Nick, what if there's rumours that lists will be cut by five or so, maybe more, what effect do you think it'll have on Richmond?
So there's the current Damien Barrett rumour is that they'll go from 45 to 41 next year on sort of with a view to getting to 35 eventually. Look at There's nothing but sad stories when you reduce the list. Like, it's actually, from a football perspective, you know, it's late round draft picks, and, you know, Oleg Markov, who's been on the list for a while, Ben Miller, Luke English, I mean, Alex Rance, obviously, Iglamezi Smith, Ryan Garthwaite's out of contract. Like, they're all fringe guys, but you think, you know, Nathan Broad at the end of 2016 was one of those guys. He was, you know, fringe player who'd done nothing so far. And you just think, oh, how many great stories are we missing out on by having fewer players on the list? So, yeah, I think it'd be a real shame.
Yeah, like, surely one of, say, Short or Castagna don't make the Richmond list because they never get the opportunity if there are less people able to train with the club.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, and definitely.
How would you feel if Alex Rance made a comeback with another club?
Are you writing Herald Sun clickbait articles? Yeah, I was chatting to someone who's worked in media the other day about, like, you know, they know that if they write a Rance piece, it gets, apparently the Herald Sun, they have big video screens up that show everything that's trending, which is why, you know, you see those endless Beck Judd articles, because, you know, people hate tweet them. Yeah, so the Alex Rance is you clearly get a lot of those. Those articles, you know, excited about that, you know, people click on it. But look, I don't know. I sort of wonder how good he'd be anyway now. Anyway, the longer he spends out of the game, and obviously he can't play for anyone this year, and he's getting what, 31, highly athletic centre half back at 31. Like, what are we losing by that stage, really?
Yeah, I've moved on from him as a Richmond player, and certainly sounds like the club has, but yeah, it'd be weird.
Yeah, I mean, he's ridiculous. It's not going to, he's hurt his personal brand by his behaviour a bit, I think. Being a Richmond Premiership hero would have got you invited to a lot of things, but it's sort of mixed emotions, but, you know, we'll always remember how his ridiculous handsomeness and his incredibly good he was.
Yeah. He got tagged as a key defender. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, look.
Including in a grand final.
Yeah, no, he was, there's an awful lot to enjoy and appreciate, and with the years go past and, slightly less annoyed with him for not playing this year, he'll be 100% forgiven. What else has been happening?
Well, we've got the schedule for the next five rounds of the competition. You know, we've got Collingwood first up Thursday week. I think it's Hawthorn after that. West Coast up at Metricon. I think Hawthorn up there, Hawthorn in Melbourne. It will be interesting. Like, I think all the talk about, you know, where we're having to play teams, I think without crowds, home ground doesn't mean very much. So, you know, if it's in Melbourne or it's Metricon Stadium, you know, with the exception of both the Giants and Geelong's home grounds, they're all just pretty generic shaped ovals if they don't have crowds in the stands. So I don't know. I'm the sort of think,
I have
football back than not.
Oh no, I completely agree. But have football back. I have a slightly different take that actually, if West Coast, because they'll be acclimatised to the Brisbane weather, whereas if the AFL does what the NRL was doing, which is you basically get off the plane, play the game, get back on the plane, fly home, you'll be disappointed. Like, it's actually almost anything. The home ground advantage will have gone up for West Coast because they'll be acclimatised to the Queensland weather. Victorian clubs will basically step off the heat, have to play, then get back on. I'm not a subscriber at all to the argument that West Coast have lost their home ground advantage. So we'll see. I mean, there's more than one team. If they both have enough, we'll be able to see soon enough whether the Queensland-based clubs have an advantage or not. But look, I'm just looking forward to playing the Pies, and it was great timing that Traore got injured again. Shame that Hooley's injured, obviously. That calf's looking sort of dangerously chronic, but this is why players retire often. We got back without him. We got back without him in round one, but I really do hope his body heals enough that we can watch him again this year.
So we can come second in the Norm Smith for a third time. That'd be pretty impressive.
Yeah, it would be. I don't know. You think after the third time they'd just crack it and just give it to him?
Sympathy vote it.
Yeah. How many Norms, like the Carmelone MVP year? How many times can they give it to Dusty / Jordan? For those who don't know, Jordan, like LeBron, I think often doesn't win MVPs because the voters got bored of voting for him. And a shame Noah Cumberland's done his knee, which pretty crap thing to happen for a third round draft pick.
For a fringe guy getting a serious injury in a tournament which they're looking at list consolidation, it's not good.
No, but he's under contract till 2021, so you'd think he'd probably survive.
Yeah, you'd think he'd be fine. The AFLW best and fairest in the week, and to the surprise of absolutely nobody, Monique Conti ran it up by a mile. Phoebe Monaghan second, but I did think that you would approve that both Alice Edmonds, the first ruck, came 10th, but Gabby Seymour, who was both centre half back and backup ruck, came 3rd. So, showing some love to the ruckman at last.
Yeah, I thought Monaghan was good, but I wasn't 100% sure because, you're sort of getting a lot of ball in a crappy back line, which is giving up a lot of points, and, there's footballs down there a lot, so I didn't know whether she was good or not, but sort of my eye test was she was good and her stats were good, so I was kind of, it's one of those, because she never got much publicity, the marketing team now needs to go and, provided we keep Conti, of course, because these contracts aren't super long, because
I think Conti's under contract for next year.
Yeah, I think she is too. A few thoughts on the AFLW. Actually, it was noticeable. We announced we sacked our coach at 8 o'clock on a Friday night.
That was a bit messy.
I don't know who thought that was a good idea, because by doing it that way, you're advertising that I'm ashamed of what I'm doing. It's not the crime that gets you.
Yeah.
Court, it's the cover-up. That was poor form. To their credit, and maybe this was because it wasn't in person, he actually gave it a speech at the Best and Fairest night. So, not all a bad story. It's time to Sabrina Fredericks is good. She tied sixth, I think, with three other players and Best and Fairest, but she's not the star.
Although I was thinking about Jack never does particularly well in Best and Fairests either. Then there might be some sort of inherent bias against key forwards.
Well, no, true, but they also made her sort of vice captain, and I would say, with Katie Brennan, she didn't make it, obviously. She missed a lot of the last games of the year. I was talking about this with a friend the other day, and I've been thinking about Katie Brennan. If you're going to, one thing you know, his stats were, we've discussed, they were all right last year. Like, you know, all right as in relative to her reputation. Like, Robbo had a point in his article that she's probably more famous than she's good, but she's not. She's actually pretty good still, though.
She's pretty good, yeah.
But
and we were abjectly bad without her.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that the moment she got knocked out, we basically collapsed after that moment. There's something to that. And, by the way, Western Bulldogs weren't very good when she left either. So, I don't know what this... You know, you don't want to read too much into it. It's only one player, but yeah, the timing does make her look good a little bit in hindsight. I think that's the strongest case for her. You know, it's that as discussed, like her goal assist stats and things like that were quite. Her score involvement stats were decent last year when her season ended. Anyway. As discussed before, not the best end to the year, good on, congratulations to Monique, and as Rick Bartlett says, she'll go down in history as the first ever best and fairest winner. Who knows, you know, she keeps her current career trajectory, she might have a medal or two named after her.
True. I did like, actually, speaking of Basha Hooley, I did like, Adam Dodoro's saying that Essendon deliberately let him go in order to recruit Michael Hibbard, which bears no truth when you actually look into it. And if Essendon.
So just to explain, Adrian Dodoro, he's the long-time Essendon football GM.
Yeah, so he took over Essendon in 1998, and obviously they won the 2000 Premiership, with most of the 1993 team plus grown-up baby boomers plus Matthew Lloyd and Scott Lucas, by statistical measures, the best team of the 2000s. And now they've done 15 years without a finals win with a collective winning percentage of 42%. And I sort of made the joke of, because I've been watching the TV show The Americans about deep sleeper KGB agents, and, you could almost make the argument that Dodoro's some sort of deep sleeper double agent in Essendon sent to sabotage their efforts, because it is remarkable how mediocre they've been for a long time under his stewardship.
But just explain why the his Hooley claim was a complete fabrication.
Well, so he said that because they delisted Hooley, they had space for Michael Hibbard in the preseason draft, which overlooks that, they had five picks in the national draft, most of whom were no good whatsoever, so they could have just drafted one less player, and there is no way Michael Hibbard was about the 100th player picked in the draft. There was no way they knew he was going to be available, and, if they could have organised a proper trade and Richmond had offered a draft pick for him and Essendon wanted a higher pick and we couldn't get the deal done, it would have happened. We've gone nearly 20 years without doing a deal with Essendon because they're so hard to deal with. So, maybe after a while, all the PR is just spin, and you're not very good at your job.
No, it is quite remarkable. I mean, obviously there was the great big asterisk, which presumably he wasn't responsible for, because otherwise he wouldn't be there anymore. At what point does 15 years of failure? Because
would you say we trade a first round draft pick for Dion Prestia? Would you trade two first round draft picks for Dylan Scheel?
No, see, here's the thing. Like, a lot of if you follow the sort of advanced scanning on this kind of stuff, like especially in a large team sport where you got a lot of players on the field, it's really hard for one player to be better than two. Especially two decent
especially
players.
Especially if they don't kick the ball very well.
Yes. No. Like, it's a problem. And, you know, is already in the prime of their career, so has... and what was the flag to a path? Like, who was Shield supporting that was going to get them over the top to achieve what? Now, you know, you can make a bit the case with the Prestia trade as well, but as previously pointed out, the Hooley cost was lower.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Unfortunately, the player that the player that they got wasn't very good, so that turned out quite happily for us.
I wanted to follow up on something from our last show where we talked about changing the culture of bringing in Ivan Marich, and with thanks to the good people that do the AFL tables. So Ivan Marich comes to Richmond in 2012. Every single Richmond player has a losing record when he comes to the club. And you fast forward to round one, 2002, and we've got every single Richmond player who played versus Carlton, and all but one Richmond player who've played senior football on our entire list. Like, Patrick Naish is literally the only Richmond player without a winning record on our list. And I think it's six of our players who've got a winning record above 80%. Like, it's just ridiculous how good we are now and how bad we were then. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Marich is the turning point in that.
True. Like, no doubt he was very important, as was drafting Dusty Rance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think there's a talent and a character component to the club. And
true.
And I think, I just think how... I've been watching a lot of old football games, and we'll talk about one shortly, but I think how lucky the current generation of Richmond players are coming up in a team like this that's so much better suited to get the best out of their abilities.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Like, a lot of them are. Maybe Jack Ross is maybe one who would be getting more time on a worse team.
That's true.
Yeah, but like,
is he Mark Coghlan on a worse team?
Probably. Well, we're going to talk about Mark Coghlan because he played in that game that we're about to talk about. But I don't think so. But I think he'd be in the rotation because you'd be wanting to. Well, he's a guy. He'll be part of our midfield in 5 years' time. Get some more games into him. Whereas our young players tend to play peripheral roles. And I think you're absolutely right with your point with someone like Sydney Stack. You know, Sydney Stack. His stats, the advanced metrics for him relative to his age are just phenomenal, but that's a part of that is to, and he has been very good, but part of that is he's, as you say, put in a position to succeed on a good team, where things are going his way. And he's not expected to be, he's a peripheral player, he's not playing against the opposition's sort of top 10 players, he's probably playing against the opposition's 21st best player most of the time when he's out there. Yes, I know he ran over Jack Viney, but he wasn't actually playing on him at the time. I think you're exactly right. But and look, it was a cracking trade, the Marich trade. Having a bad ruck is really bad because it's he's in the centre square that affects so much of the overall play, and you're just filling a really difficult to fill position with a second round pick for what four very solid years at least. I know he had a longer career than that for us, but I think he 4 years of good output and his prime, didn't have to waste any years, often forgotten with rucks, that cost of 4 years you spend developing him, that's an opportunity cost if you've drafted them. I know we haven't actually, when was the last time we drafted someone in the national draft who turned out to be a good first ruck for us? It's been a long time.
Ivan Soldo?
Yeah. But I was sort of counting him. I sort of meant non, I wasn't counting rookie list players.
Brad Elton's played for us for a little while.
Yeah, and like you could make the argument with Paddo, obviously. Like, you know, I was thinking about someone you invested resources in. If Colin Jones is sort of like, well, we're seeing it with Colin Jones. Cost a high draft pick. Basically hasn't
done it. Takes a while.
He's no, like he backed up one game last year, but no functional use for the senior club, earning over $100,000 a year. Probably $200,000 now, actually. He's on his second contract, isn't he? And hasn't done anything yet. Like, there's a lot of cost to that, whereas Marich comes in straight away. You're paying him for his prime, and he's great.
Anyway. So should we do our classic?
Yeah, it's actually a perfect time to segue to the game because we're playing the controversial three ruck strategy in this game, Nick. Now, do you?
I know. Shall I set the?
Yes, please. Set the table.
So it's Carlton versus Richmond, round 7, 2005. You know, both teams are very precariously poised. Going into the game, Richmond was 7th, Carlton were 9th. Carlton had played every game of that season so far within 20 points, so they'd been really competitive. After a couple of down years, we'd sort of had Terry Wallace come in, and we had the older guys like Wayne Campbell and Joel Bowden, Matthew Richardson, and the young guns of Delidio and Tambling, and sort of you really didn't know what the team could be, but what we did know was that with Nathan Brown and Matthew Richardson, we had a pair of stars in the forward line, and this game was the most beautiful expression of how good this team could be when it was on its day.
Yeah, and it was sort of, they were the stars, and Coghlan plays very well this day, so, and there's a
38 disposals.
And 7 tackles, the second highest tackling, the tackle rates are much lower. Like, you really notice it watching the football. Football's good, actually. The quality of the football's good. Now, you know, we score 46 points to 0 to start the game, so it starts, you know, obviously, we're playing.
Yeah. We're
as on as you can possibly be.
Carlton are goalless in the first half.
But, you know, the football's different. It's less contested. Like, they sort of contest hard at the contest, but then once the switch is on and the ball's in space, you know, that sort of there's a lot of backing off until there's the next contest. And it's funny, at one stage the commentators say, well, Carlton have a lot of trouble defending the fat side switch. Have had a lot of trouble defending the fat side switch. It's like, God, no one would say that now. Like, you know, every team in the AFL defends the fat side switch quite well. Like, you know, we barely bother to even try to do it unless it's wide open. It's different footy, but the condition's perfect. Like, as before mentioned, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day at the J, and so naturally we play three rucks, so we can play Stafford and Troy Simmons forward at the same time in a team that already has Richo.
Yeah, Richo at centre half forward, Stafford in the goal square, Troy Simmons running around as well, so that Greg Stafford gets injured in the first half, and so we have Troy Simmons, who's, you know, 105 kilos, as our backup, as our third string ruckman. Oh, it's ridiculous.
It is, and go on.
Kind of fun, though.
It was a lot of fun. It was, you did sort of notice with Trent Noble that, like, he had a pretty narrow path to play AFL, games of AFL footy, didn't he? Because if he wasn't dominating the rucks, he's basically doing nothing else. So you sort of, like, that's, like, there wasn't much he could do, was there?
He was at his third AFL club in Richmond. He finishes top 10 in the AFL when he doubts. He's not very good.
No, because we weren't a particularly, we almost, like, if you sort of look at the midfield, you know, with guys like Cambo, Tuck, and Coghlan on the team, it's almost like we wanted to lose the tap so we could tackle the guy with the football sometimes. But I did sort of think, you know, we talk about the sort of how Richmond lacked a good small forward. Yeah, well, sort of, if they're that badly, like, it must have been pretty hard to play, like, in that forward. Like, when you get that many lumbering beasts wandering there, and, you know, you've got a bit of a problem, don't you, with mobility in the forward line?
Yeah, you do. Although, the, you know, Greg Stafford, who's 204 centimetres, lining up against David Teague, I think was about 185 centimetres, so 27 centimetre advantage to start with, and, you know, Darren Gasper playing against Wadling, Whitnell and Brett Thornton playing on Richard. I just thought, we had some pretty elite athletes on either end of the ground.
Yeah, it's interesting. At one stage, they say Thornton had played well against Richard in the past, and I vaguely remember that, but, like, when you look at the two of them, it's almost comical, because, like, Richard's so much bigger than Thornton. But it was, so Richo kicks his 600th goal in the game. It's his second goal of the, and it's just, he kicks it, he marks just on the edge of the 50, so he probably kicks it from, you know, just at about 60, and the ball sails through at post height and goes, like, sort of 10, 15 rows deep. Like,
yeah.
My God, that man was strong. Like, when he properly kicked it.
Big, beautiful athlete.
Yeah. He's an incredible guy to watch. It was such an, you know, it's like, it's just good to remind that everything we say about Richard, why he was so important to the characteristic of the club, like, it's all true. You go back and watch the tape, it's all justified.
Mm. Yeah, he was pretty great. Jack Riewoldt has had one season in his whole career where he kicked more goals per game than Nathan Brown did in 2005. He was really on. And just a born goal-kicking talent.
He was. Interestingly, he wasn't... I noticed even, like, during the game, like, he'd do some amazing stuff, but he wasn't always sort of functional. Like, his speed was not always noticeable. Like, a few times, like, he got the ball in traffic in the middle and he couldn't actually get separation to find space. Nick, you know, I sort of mentioned in the last time we discussed Richard Tambling is that I've been sort of saying you can see why, with the benefit of hindsight, you can see why he didn't make it. But I keep watching him again. It's like I'm re-having that debate in my head, because occasionally he does really good stuff, and you can say, oh, I could totally see how I would have thought that he would have been the next big thing. Like, I mean, Lutz is noticeably better, but, like, I find myself debating Richard Tambling again.
I know. There are moments where he looks like a baby Andrew McLeod. Like, if you're, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you think, oh, he gets run down just a little bit too often than you would like for someone who's meant to be an elite athlete. But, yeah, he's very exciting.
Like, yeah.
I was excited at the time, and I can see why.
There's a moment early in the first, it's his first touch, and it's a hot situation in the middle of the centre square, and he just sort of, he bravely runs out and just jumps in the air and grabs it, and then he gets sort of, but he has time to take one or two steps, and then two Carlton players tackle him, and he gets done holding the ball. And this is very unfair, but I couldn't help but thinking that, I mean, you know, so not just picking Indigenous players, but, you know, all our current small forwards would have probably hand-passed the ball. There was a Richmond player over the top, and although it was a hard hand pass, almost, you know, Rioli, Shai Bolton definitely would have seen it, would have at least attempted that hand pass. Might not have hit it, because it was really hot, but the fact he didn't quite have the awareness to even see that, attempt that hand pass. And look, he's in his first year. Look, if we had argued this at the time, you probably would have rightfully come down on me from a ton of bricks, but you do see just those flashes of lack of awareness as well as the good things.
I know. Whereas, you know, Lids has a moment in the first quarter where he gets the ball and just burns off the Carlton player, takes one bounce, and then runs about 35 minutes and gets done for running too far, but he's such a he's a super elite athlete.
Yeah, like that's the kind of mistake where you go, oh well, that's youth. That's all right. That's fixable.
Yeah.
Actually, Nick, do you remember when he got caught holding the ball because the Carlton player just grabbed his jumper while he was taking a bounce? I haven't watched that game since 2005, but I remember that moment so clearly watching the game. I was outraged at the time.
Speaking of young players at the time, particularly Danny Myers, second quarter. Like, he's a highly skilled first round draft pick. He's skinny, but he cracks in hard. There's nothing to show that the profound disappointment that his career would become.
He is skinny, though, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and
I loved watching Andrew Callaway again.
Do you notice the tap really early in the game where there was sort of the ball was fumbling in the air and he knew where the Richmond player was and he just tapped it out to him? It was very clever and very actually 2019 Richmond, but and he hit him perfectly. But I thought, that's really good football awareness.
Oh no, and look, and he was brave. He was brave like Duncan. And he was a better kick as well. Actually, watching the game, I remembered. His kicking motion wasn't quite as awkward, and he did hit guys on the lead. I felt quite the surge of goodwill for him.
The team was interesting. It surged really hard out of the back line. Like, when they were... You could see Terry brought in something where he wanted the team to play tempo football at times, and that was because when the accelerator was on, it was really on. The players ran really hard out of the back line. Even guys like Ray Hall would run very hard for a handball receive, even though it was not always... the outcome when he got it was mixed. He's a good runner, so he could straighten up, but, interesting things happened. It was nice to see, I enjoyed that Gas was playing in the game and was still competent. It was really nice to see those two especially, and just remember, they were good players. And, we know they're good players, but it was nice to see them again.
Yeah, and Joel Bowden, for all the publicity about some the deliberate behinds and kicking his brother in the Adelaide game, he was a genuinely good kick of the football, and all the advanced metrics absolutely love him for that. But he was a fun player to watch.
Yeah, by the way, again, to sort of relitigate something we already discussed, but you can see why this team wanted Jordan McMahon, because it's a bit slow transitioning out of the back line.
Yeah.
And it's like relying on it wants to play this running streaming game out of the back line. It doesn't really have, Joel does it well, but just use your common sense. He's not the ideal release guy off half back because he's just not fast. You want, this team would love a Jaden Short. This team would, Obasha Hooley.
I know. I did have a think. So there was one of the many clickbait articles talked about the lost Richmond dynasty from Nathan Brown breaking his leg. And, they were good, but they weren't that good.
Oh, funny you say that, Nick, because I want to just demolish a straw man of my own imagination. On exactly that point, so I remember the 2005 season as we were on fire, we were playing really well, and I remember distinctly I went from Mongolia to a holiday, and I left and Richmond were playing really well. For somehow the reason I convinced myself we were undefeated, which we weren't, but that's how I remember it, and I tell the story, and I turned on a...
We'd had two quite bad losses.
Yeah, and I somehow got into an internet cafe in Mongolia and, read about the absolute car wreck that the Melbourne game was. So that's how I remembered that season. I often tell the story of, another example of, Richmond's tortured past. But exactly right. We had lost two games by 10 goals in that season already. we most of the teams we've beaten, like we beat, we narrowly beat a couple of teams that wound up sort of mid-table. But we were beating up a few cream puffs as well. We didn't beat any one of the top four teams, in that run before Nathan Brown breaks his leg in round 10. And as you say, we just weren't that good. And by the way, if your forward pocket breaking his leg is what keeps you out of the finals, you're not that good a team. And we didn't finish ninth either. It wasn't that.
No matter how good that forward pocket was, no.
Yeah.
I did think, the midfield's got Sean Tuck and 32-year-old Wayne Campbell, and Andy Crackers has a go in midfield. Nathan Foley's not in this game, but plays a few games. Even Mark Coghlan, we were good. We were super hard at the contests, but I just don't think we ran very hard the other way when the team had the ball, and we couldn't stop good teams, and they got on the roll.
No, absolutely. And when you're doing all these things, you're playing tall, as you say, you bring Campbell off the bench, all these guys were good and bowed, but they're not going to be able to chase. If the footy's not going in your direction, which obviously we're not going to watch any of the bad games, you can see how this team wouldn't be able to turn it around. It will get overwhelmed. It will get swamped and overwhelmed. The team is a bit like Richo in a bit. It's a bit like a tank. That it's great when it's charging forward. But if it has to move nimbly or chase, it's not as good. I don't know. I'm butchering that analogy, but it's just not, the team is not that good. I completely agree. And it struck me, even watching it, and
internet, very entertaining.
Yes. It's fun footy. There's an argument it's a better team to watch than the current team.
Nathan Brown in all Australian form, we had a good chance to finish seventh.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Oh, and that was probably the natural peak of the team, which sadly still would have been our best season for 4 years at the time, and then for another decade. But the team wasn't that good. It must have been exciting. I wasn't there live at that game. I watched it on TV. But gee, it must have been exciting.
It was very exciting
to imagine all those tours that we were bombing the ball in long to, and there was a lot of interesting stuff going on in that team, but it was not.
I watched of the many old football games, I watched round one from 2000, where we start off with Richo and Ottens on the full forward line, and Ben Holland at centre-half forward. Jeez, that's a lot of really good tall players. And next to them in the other forward pocket, we had Clay Sampson. I thought, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Football has changed, doesn't it?
It's a drop off in talent.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Mm. Anyway, it was good fun to watch.
Yeah, it was great fun to watch. And part of the moral of the story was we shouldn't take for granted this amazing abundance of talented small forwards that we have at the moment.
No, exactly. Probably Richo looks at Jake Arts and thinks, I play with guys worse than him.
Yeah, definitely. So, can we also take a minute so Carlton were a fantastic team during the 20th century. They won two-thirds of their games through the entire century, and they've won one-third of their games in the 21st century. And they've already had two different stretches of not making the finals that were longer than any of their stretches of not making the finals for an entire century. That makes me pretty happy.
It does. Well, I mean, I think we're sort of almost ending Dennis Pagan's career in that game. I mean, it's only round seven, but,
Yeah.
It was going pretty badly.
Certainly his will to live.
Yeah, that was not... Yeah, losing to the traditional rivalry like that, that was not... That does not extend your... livelihood as the coach, but on the flip side, can you just I remember this game, like the giddy optimism, but just, smacking down a rival. But yeah,
it was pretty great.
Yeah, but as you say, but it was a team that was great when the ball was bouncing in its direction.
Yeah. So we are getting tantalisingly close to the end of YouTube football and return of real football. So yeah, we'll do another show before the Collingwood game, and you know, no more misty coloured nostalgia. It'll be back to the churning nerves and tension of real football, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, it's a really big game. I'm looking forward to it too. Angry Old Man Rant, don't believe in crowd noise, piped in crowd noise. I think a lot of people in the media industry like it because it's a production thing, like it requires creativity and thought, but you know, I don't want the sound of like what was a cheer from a Collingwood Carlton game being used in the back of a Richmond game. You know, I'd much prefer to listen to the players. I'm interested in the players. I follow football, and I don't want the crowd to be sort of faceless, a faceless replaceable program. If I want to do that, I'll play a computer game. You know, I like hearing what the players say. I find this personalities of this Richmond team fascinating. I love to hear them like talk to each other, and I loved hearing the players call.
Yeah. That was one of the, like, round one was weird when the ball was bouncing in empty stands, but yeah, I did actually really enjoy hearing the players call for each other, and yeah, when you'd have that sort of rolling surge of Richmond players going forward, I loved hearing how they talk to one another.
Yeah, but
can't have it back.
No, absolutely not. Oh, absolutely.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal, one of the Tigers. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks.
Oh, she is. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
From Tigerland, we never weep until the final siren's gone. Like the tiger of old, the strong and revolt, for we're from Tiger, yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.